right center. If he hits one there, we can dance in the streets. The 2-1. Swung line drive left field. One run is in. Here comes Freed. Here's the throw to the plate. He is safe. Braves win. They may have to hospitalize Sid Freed. He's down at the bottom of a huge pile.
Yo,
of the
I'm
plate.
Dirty like a vandal. Too they hot to handle.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Sports Talk ATL podcast. Good to be back here with you back on this fine Tuesday afternoon. We got a lot here to talk about, including the Falcons' disappointing loss to the Panthers, the popular hashtag Fire Sarkisian. We're going to discuss some Braves news for the first time on the podcast and where this team is going to be headed. And are the Hawks the next landing for Jahlil Okafor, who has fallen out of sorts in Philadelphia? And then, of course, we're going to top it all off looking ahead to the Dallas Cowboys, which could be a make-or-break game for the Falcons this upcoming week on primetime 425 slot on Fox. So, big game this weekend for Atlanta. Could be one that really eliminates them from playoff contention rather early, if you're looking realistically at things. So, we're going to talk about all this in the second episode of our podcast, and we're really glad that you're listening with us. I'm here with my co-host Harrison Coburn for the first time. Harrison, how are you doing today?
Good, Chase. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Really happy to be doing this. Let's just get right into it. The Falcons come off of a kind of sloppy win against the Jets, but there's some good things. There was some, obviously, winning coming off three straight losses is a good thing looking going forward, but the offense looked a bit better despite the two fumbles, and really fans started to look for some progression heading into Carolina, a team who many people expected the Falcons to beat, experts, Vegas even, but they didn't. They came out and they played like they played the whole season, and they fell disappointingly once again. And once again, the offense struggled, the defense played decent, and they lost another close game in a disappointing fashion.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised by the outcome of the game as well, with no Kelvin Benjamin. Yeah, the Falcons, they looked pretty good to start the game, jumped out to a 10-0 lead. Once it hit about that 5-minute mark in the second quarter, that's when the momentum just totally changed in the game. The Panthers started making plays on offense and defense, and they just never looked back, honestly.
Yeah, that's how this season's been for Atlanta all year. They jump out to the big leads. They kind of seem to just forget how to play after that. And teams start to gain momentum, and the Falcons kind of choke, much like they did in the Super Bowl. I mean, it's really been the blueprint for the entire season, which makes you wonder how much the Super Bowl is looming in the back of their minds every time they get a lead heading into the fourth quarter or in the second half. When I looked at this game a week ago, I had it pegged pretty much to a T. Can Cam Newton make enough plays to top a Falcons team that has been struggling to score? I thought the Falcons would get their 20 to 24 points. Unfortunately, they didn't get that much, or they would have won. But at the end of the day, Cam Newton outplayed Matt Ryan. Maybe statistically, the passing numbers, you look at Ryan, 24 for 38, 313 yards, two touchdowns, and an interception compared to Newton's 13 for 24 and 137 yards. But then you throw in Newton's rushing, 9 for 86 and a touchdown, and then you look at their QBRs. Ryan was a much less accurate quarterback. He missed a lot of open passes. Obviously, the touchdown to Julio Jones that he did hit would have helped him and probably put the Falcons over the top in this one. But at the end of the day, Newton just outplayed Matt Ryan from a quarterback perspective, and just enough to get the Panthers a 3-point win.
Yeah, I mean, going off what you were saying about the Julio Jones, first of all, he's never getting that one back. That was terrible. I had him in fantasy, and I just about had a heart attack. But all that aside, the Falcons, they just consistently missed opportunities. I mean, that was the perfect example of it. And then the Panthers, they literally took advantage of every opportunity that was thrown at them, and honestly, that was the difference in the game. Matt Ryan definitely looked pretty timid out there. I actually did think he did make some pretty nice deep throws yesterday, but I don't know, I guess the good kind of did outweigh the bad. the Falcons do have a tendency to let, you know, quarterbacks with wheels run all over them, and, you know, Cam Newton made it look like it was Slam Newton 2015 out there.
Yeah, Cam Newton tends to have really good games against the Falcons. I said it last week, you throw out last year where Cam Newton wasn't 100%, he's always made life tough for the Falcons, no matter how much talent is around him. And that's what he did once again on Sunday, made the plays. Kudos to them. I think you also have to get a lot of credit to Carolina's defense, particularly against the rush. They held this Falcons offense, who has not been able to run the ball as consistently without Shanahan, which is not a surprise. I think that's where a lot of people thought the drop-off would be, because Shanahan implemented that zone blocking scheme so perfectly in Atlanta, and then Sarkisian coming in and just trying to emulate that. Not a lot of people were sure how that was going to work, and it hasn't worked particularly awfully this entire year, but, you know, Carolina really got the best of them, you know, on the ground. Only 18 carries for 53 yards, and the offensive line for Atlanta hasn't been playing up to par this whole season, or at least comparatively to last year. And that those are just areas. They're not that far off from where they were last year, but they're in one particular area. But in every area, it seems they're just a little bit worse, and it just is kind of, you know, they've regressed to sort of the mean, which is kind of how the NFL works. You're either really good or you're average. And, you know, there's a few really bad teams, but most teams are either really good or average.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it just looks like a team that their confidence is shot. You know, I mean, the offense is a little bit different. I do think a big problem is Steve Sarkisian. Do I think Falcons fans should give him a little bit more time? Probably, because, I mean, you know, Shanahan wasn't great in his first year either. The biggest problem right now, I think, is that Sarkisian is trying to keep these guys comfortable in the offense, what they, you know, were used to doing last year when they were historically good. The problem is, Kyle Shanahan took his assistants with him, you know? And now he's trying to run plays that nobody in the building knows how to run except for the players. And he doesn't know how to coach these guys. He's trying to mix it in with his plays. You know, that's one thing I've read has been a huge problem behind the scenes with the Falcons this year. And another, to touch on one more point you made, yeah, I really do think the Panthers' run defense did kill us. Because, as I said, the biggest turning point in that game was that 4th-and-1 when Devontae Freeman didn't get that first down. They got the ball back, and they scored. And, you know, that gave them the momentum. They never looked back.
Yeah, and that leads us to the next thing we're going to talk about, and the popular hashtag and the popular sayings around a lot of Falcons fans, and I understand it. I mean, Sarkisian hasn't been great, is the hashtag Fire Sark or Fire Sarkisian. You being, as y'all might not know, Harrison isn't a Falcons fan. He's a Ravens fan, unfortunately. He hasn't joined the good side yet. Looking at it from the outside in, I mean, what do you think of a coach being fired after just like 8 or 9 weeks? Because to me, that seems, no matter who, a little ridiculous.
I will say one thing that I can offer from an outside perspective is what it's like going from offensive coordinator to offensive coordinator. I think Joe Flacco has had like 5 new offensive coordinators in the last 7 years. And I mean, it makes a huge difference. If I could have, you know, any player in football right now to put on the Baltimore Ravens to play them to make them a contender right now, it wouldn't even be a player. It would be to bring back Gary Kubiak, who runs a very similar offense to Shanahan. Honestly, kind of like, I don't want to say taught him, because, you know, obviously Mike Shanahan he and Kubiak are kind of the originators of the West Coast offense, but, you know, little Shanahan's been studying that forever, and he has a bright offensive mind. You see a lot of these West Coast guys try to come in and emulate the success of guys like Kubiak and Shanahan, and it just doesn't work. I mean, we brought in, right now we have Marty Mordenweg, and he's been terrible. We had Mark Trestman, who's supposed to be similar. He was awful. So it's a similar offense, but it's very different, and it makes a huge difference. I do think, though, that Sarkisian does have a good resume, even though he's had the off-the-field issues and didn't call the best of games for the Crimson Tide last year. He ran some of the best offenses in like college football history with USC, and I do think he's a bright mind. I think the Falcons should give him, like the fans should give him a little bit more time, but yeah, it's definitely the biggest issue the Falcons offense is facing right now is the lack of familiarity.
Yeah, well, here's what I'm going to say about it. And I understand the frustration of Falcons fans as much as anyone. I mean, I unfortunately had to listen to the Falcons game live in the car on the radio on the way back to my house. And when Julio Jones drops that catch, I mean, it's just an all-time boiling over frustration. I mean, I threw my phone across the car because that's just how the season's been going. And I understand you want to put it all on one person. And I understand Sarkisian hasn't been good. I mean, we're going to be honest. The situational play calling on third and fourth downs and shorts has just been awful. Even Quinn has commented on a couple times, which is kind of rare. He usually always has his guys back. But it's gotten to the point where sometimes he even is like, yeah, that call didn't really get me fired up as much as what he said the other day about the play action third and one they ran. I think it was late in the third or early in the fourth quarter that fooled nobody and wound it up in a punt. So I get the frustration around Sarkisian, but the reality of it is that the Falcons offense, while it hasn't been nearly as good as it was with Kyle Shanahan, who, as you said, is one of the brightest minds in all of football, it's still been pretty effective at moving up and down the field. Where it's really had trouble is once it gets into the scoring territories. And I'm talking about, obviously, the red zone, but even beyond that, once they get onto the opponent's side of the field, drives seem to stall out. The situational playing calling has been bad, and we're losing, going for it and missing it. You know, it's not been good, but these are the same similar problems we saw in Kyle Shanahan's first year. Kyle Shanahan, his first year started off terrific, but they ended up going 3-8. The offense struggled mightily. A lot of that had to do with injuries. This year, not so much. But I think you got to give Sarkisian a lot more time to really put his mark on the offense and see what he can do with them. And I think that goes beyond just this year. So I think firing Sark after this season, or in the middle of the season, is kind of ridiculous. After the season, maybe. We saw Quinn do that with Richard Smith last year on the defensive side of the ball. If he's really unhappy, he's shown he can do that. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think he's that unhappy with Sarkisian. Obviously, we don't know what's going on behind closed doors, but firing him right now is kind of ridiculous, and this is definitely not all on him. This is the players. This is Dan Quinn. This is the other assistant coaches. They're all a part of this. It's a collective group failure, honestly, this season.
Yeah, I mean, my one answer for the Falcons would be, if you're going to go somewhere else in another direction on offense, I would definitely go. Gary Kubiak actually has talked about coming back to potentially becoming an offensive coordinator. And Rick Dennison, he's the OC for Buffalo Bills. He's kind of been one of his understudies. Those would be like the guys close that would run the offense closest to where the Falcons have been at their best. But I do believe in Sarkisian. I was pretty excited for him to be Alabama's offensive coordinator, despite the iffy play calling in the national championship game. But, yeah, the jury's still out on him. I think he definitely deserves to at least prove himself the remainder of the season, though.
Yeah, a lot of people were disappointed out of Alabama that he decided to go to the NFL. I don't know if they're still disappointed, but, yeah, that was the case when he decided to take the Atlanta job. Well, we're going to move on from the fire Sark talk because, personally, I don't really like talking about that anymore because I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think it's all his fault, and I don't think it's fair to blame it all on him. Going on to another person who recently did get fired in another sport in a much more embarrassing fashion, John Coppola and the Braves have some huge questions. We don't have a GM right now, and we're heading into an offseason that is extremely important in terms of the rebuild. Where are the Braves going from here? First of all, Harrison, what do you think the punishment is going to be for this team facing these allegations?
Unfortunately, I'm pretty nervous that we'll lose top prospect Kevin Maiton, who's been compared to Miguel Cabrera as like a generational talent. And while I'm not, you know, I'm not in the building with the MLB doing their investigation, I have no inside information on this, but I mean, the fact that the kid was posting pictures of himself in Braves gear before he was 16, which is the age to sign, I always thought it was suspect. I didn't think that 2 years down the road is when it would be addressed. I am nervous we'll lose Maiton. I'm nervous we'll lose draft picks. I'm nervous we'll get fined. The Braves farm system obviously is deep enough to overcome this, but it would still be a catastrophic blow. And I mean, it's never good when the visionary of your rebuild gets fired during your rebuild. Now someone else has to finish it, you know? So the Braves have to make a decision whether they want to get a guy who, you know, will continue to stock the farm and continue this process, or if they're going to find a guy who says, hey, now that we have all these blue chip prospects, let's go in, make some deals, and start competing. I think that's pretty much their biggest decision now. They were denied permission to talk to Dayton Moore. He used to be an exec in the Braves front office and was a John Scherholz understudy. If they get permission to talk to him, they'll have to give him pretty much the keys to the franchise, which, you know, I think given where the Braves are right now would be a great move. But we'll see. They have a list of several guys who are options. But I will say, the other guys who've been mentioned, I'm not all too crazy about. You know, I'm open to Dan Jennings. He could be an intriguing option. He's very respected around baseball. I'm every single day, I look at my phone hoping that the MLB has finally completed their investigation, just gotten the punishment out of the way. I mean, it's been on my mind for the past month, stressing me out. Hopefully we'll know soon.
Yeah, I mean, losing Maiton, draft picks, prospects, whatever that may be, I mean, that's obviously huge, especially Maiton. That's a guy I know me and you are very excited about. But the Braves have the talent in the farm system to overcome that in the long term. But I think the real question is, like you said, is losing Copy, who seemed to have a clear vision of where this team was going, and replacing him with someone who's supposed to, who you hope has a similar vision or maybe a better one. But, you know, that's just hard to do. And you mentioned Dayton Moore, but if you have money in the race, who do you think is going to get that GM job for the Braves?
I mean, I'll tell you that Moore is definitely the favorite. Investigation aside, I mean, there wouldn't be a vacancy if there weren't an investigation, but I think this would be the perfect time for Moore to want to go to the Braves, because if they can get cleared of all this stuff, they're on the up, and the Royals are clearly on the down. I mean, Moustakas and Hosmer are on the market. That team is, you know, their window's over, essentially. I think Lorenzo Cain is also a free agent, so if they get permission to talk to him, considering the ties, I guess I would have to say he's the favorite. I've heard really good things about Dan Jennings, who's been in the NL East seemingly forever. He was the Marlins, like, GM for a minute, and then was their manager, and now he's an assistant with the Nationals. All I know is I don't want Jim Hendry from the Cubs. That name popped up, and, you know, I may just have to stop watching Braves baseball if we hire the guy who was basically the architect of the dark ages of the Cubs. So we'll see. Anybody but Jim Hendry would be my answer.
Yeah, and so we get our guy. What's the next step for the Braves? Is this a year where we start looking towards the playoffs? I mean, I'm looking at the Astros and the Dodgers and the Nationals and the Cubs and pretty much all the teams that made the playoffs this year. And I'm like, these teams are loaded. I mean, pretty much any of them could have won the World Series, and they were all loaded with talent. And the Braves don't even, I mean, we thought they would be a little bit closer than this now, right?
Well, I mean, they did make big improvements. As I said, whoever comes in is going to have to decide whether they want to, you know, continue the rebuilding process and accumulate assets instead of flipping them for parts. Or, you know, maybe they want to, you know, take the next step. Acuna should be the real deal. If they really wanted to, they could probably go sign a guy like Mike Moustakas. And hey, I mean, your lineup has changed overnight if you have Moustakas and Acuna added to the lineup, you know? But given the state of where the Braves are at, it wouldn't surprise me if they waited out a little bit longer with Acuna and whatnot. Moustakas is one of those guys who you could totally end up regretting paying all that money coming off a career year. They may just decide, you know, let's see what Johan Camargo can do. If he's legit, let's give him another year at the hot corner, give Rio Reese some playing time, and, you know, wait for Austin Riley. Or they might decide, hey, let's give Todd Frazier a one-year contract. I mean, there's many ways it could go. They could make a big jump soon. We just don't know what they're going to do because they literally don't even have a GM right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, given the way that the starting pitching was for Atlanta last year and the amount of uncertainty there is in that area heading into the 2018 season, it's hard to imagine this team seriously competing for the division with the Washington Nationals, still having loads of talent and still trying to finally, you know, win a playoff series after all, something they can't do. But it's going to be interesting to see. Baseball offseason is probably going to be the most important time of the year for the Braves, as it's been for the past few years. The regular season has just been kind of, you know, fun to watch the young guys play around. But the offseason is really where we're going to see where this team is headed. And another team that could be headed in a little bit different direction, huge news breaking yesterday when David Aldridge reported that the Bulls and Hawks are the two most likely landing spots for the 76ers, Jahlil Okafor, who has kind of been just ostracized by the organization and made to look like a bum. I mean, this guy won a national title in his 1 year with Duke, showed tremendous talent, was taken third overall, and has really done nothing in Philadelphia because of, you know, what the heck is going on there?
Well, it's kind of crazy that it seemed like they had just like the ultimate trio at center last year with Joel Embiid, Jahlil Okafor, and Nerlens Noel. Now Noel has been out the door, and Okafor is clearly the next one to go. I think he's only played one or two games. I mean, the kid has a lot of talent. I think the biggest question with him is like his attitude, his character. You know, my good buddy, he's a Sixers fan. He's like, look, Jahlil has a ton of talent. I just don't want him on my team anymore, you know? The good news for the Hawks is I think his qualifying offer wasn't offered. So he'll be an unrestricted free agent next year. So, I mean, it's basically just a one-year thing. If they do make a deal, I've seen that the Sixers' asking price for him is a second-rounder. And when you consider that he's 21 years old, given the amount of talent he has, I think a second-rounder for a one-year, basically trial period in a lost tanking year anyways, that's a no-brainer for me because, I mean, Coach Bud and these guys, they've done a good job, you know, developing players. And Jahlil Okafor has all the upside in the world. And, you know, if you pick up an extra piece like this, first of all, him and John Collins could be a nice little duo. Second of all, it lets you focus on getting more of like a two or a three in the draft. You know, I mean, we're looking at a top draft pick that lets us look at guys like Luka Doncic, who's, you know, he's leading the EuroLeague in scoring at age 19, which is unbelievable. Michael Porter Jr., he could be a generational talent. So, you know, it at least gives the Hawks more options going forward. I think the risk or the reward way outweighs the risk, but there's definitely risk there.
Yeah, if I'm the Hawks, I am 100% all over this for pretty much the exact reason you said. You got a one-year trial period to see if this former number three overall pick, who has already shown in the NBA, he can ball. I mean, this is a guy, his rookie season. As a rookie, is averaging 17.5 points and 7 rebounds, over 50% shooting, 69% from the line, 1.2 blocks a game. I mean, this is no bum. I mean, those are rookie stats, and for some reason, obviously, you know, the attitude issues. But Coach Budenholzer has always been able to get the most out of his talent. And Jahlil Okafor might be perhaps the most talented player he's had in Atlanta since he's coached. I mean, this was a number three overall pick, definitely the highest drafted. So there's a real potential here. And if it doesn't work out, you let him go. I mean, it's not like the Hawks are winning this year anyways. I read a few people on Twitter, you know, everyone's talking about, oh, all these contending teams should be all over the Jahlil Okafor because they don't have a center. You know, they need to get bigger. The Celtics should get Jahlil Okafor. And to me, that's just foolish. I mean, that's not a fit at all. I mean, I love Brad Stevens, but in reality, Jahlil Okafor shouldn't be going to a contending team. I mean, if there's anywhere where his attitude can affect a team, it's a contender. He should be going to a place where he can find himself, and I think Atlanta, it would be the perfect place for him, and it's been the perfect place for a lot of players, and this could be a real place where he could grow. I think if I'm Jahlil Okafor, he may not know it, but he wants to be in Atlanta, and if I'm Atlanta, this is definitely a risk I'm taking for just really, I mean, it's a small risk for a huge reward.
Yeah, and I mean, he fits what Schlenk put together this offseason. I mean, he put a roster together, just a bunch of guys who can shoot. You know, it's an offensive roster, you know? And that's what Jahlil is. He's an offensive player. So he can kind of continue the mold that Schlenk is trying to develop, which honestly I think is, hey, let's get a bunch of shooters, let's get a bunch of guys who can play offense and let a great defensive coach and Mike Budenholzer, who even taught Tim Hardaway Jr. how to play defense, and Kyle Korver. Well, even though Tom Thibodeau probably, you know, should be due some credit there too, but, you know.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're in agreement there. We're all over Jahlil Okafor. I would love to see him in a Hawks uniform. It's fun to see some new faces. I mean, when your team's this bad, the Hawks are already 2-9. They're probably going to be in the top 5 in the lottery. Just to give something for us Hawks fans to watch for, maybe fill up the seats, something. Give us Jahlil Okafor. That'd be fun. Moving into the last topic, we're going to look ahead to next week. Cowboys-Falcons. Cowboys coming into Atlanta after their big win over the Chiefs, in which they looked like a real serious, you know, threat to get to the Super Bowl. I mean, these Cowboys are for real. They went 13-3 last year. They kind of came out of the gate slow this year, 2-3. But they've won 3 in a row, and they've looked legit doing it. Serious running game. Dak Prescott's legit. I like the Cowboys this year, and this is going to be a tough one for Atlanta to win.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the biggest question mark, which has kind of become the biggest question mark every week at the Cowboys, is Ezekiel Elliott going to play? But I like this week as a prime opportunity for Matt Ryan to kind of get his confidence back and have a big game. The Cowboys' secondary is terrible, so I got a feeling this is going to be kind of like a shootout game. So hopefully Matt Ryan can go out gunslinging against a weak secondary and get that W for Atlanta.
Yeah, well, Vegas is right there with you. Atlanta, surprisingly, even at home, opened this game against the Cowboys as 3-point favorites, basically meaning that if these two teams played on a neutral field, it would be an even game, which I don't know if that's how these two teams have played so far. Actually, I know that that's not how these two teams have played so far. The Cowboys have been a much better team, a much more consistent team, and a much more explosive team. I think the real question here in this game, and I wrote about it in an article yesterday, is after losing 4-5, looking 4-4, and looking around the NFC with a lot of good teams, which I don't think a lot of people expected that. I think a lot of people thought the NFC might be down this year, but looking at it now, halfway through the season, there is loads of good teams throughout the NFC, and the Falcons are not there yet. They have to play the Cowboys and the Seahawks, two teams they could be competing for a wild card spot with. If they don't win one of those two games, at least, I mean, they're out of playoff contention, realistically.
Yeah. I mean, the NFC has had some serious sleeper teams this year. I mean, where did the Eagles come from?
Well, I think the Eagles are something that I saw from last year when they were the last team to beat Atlanta, and they were the only team that really beat Atlanta to the ground. I mean, I think the score was 29-15. They ran the ball really well. Went through for, I believe, 2 touchdowns. Looked really good as a rookie. And that was the last game Atlanta lost. It was right before a bye week, which is expected. That happens to a lot of teams around the NFL, losing before their bye week. But the Eagles looked really good in that game. And that was a team that I was like, you know, that team's good. That team's heading in the right direction under Doug Peterson. And now they're looking a lot like what the Falcons looked like last year.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like every single year in the NFC, there's that one team. I mean, 2 years ago, it was the Panthers. It seems like it's always just kind of random. There's always just one team in the NFC South that comes out on fire going to the playoffs, and randomly, it looks the Saints have just been a different team this year. But I still think this division's wide open. You know, I don't think the Saints and the Panthers are all that good. I mean, the Falcons have just as much talent. It's just a matter of whether it clicks. And, you know, I don't know if it's going to this year. I do believe in what Dan Quinn's building. And I don't think, like, this is, like, the end of the Falcons. They're going to be a one-year wonder. I don't think that. But we'll see. I mean, the NFC has just been a very unpredictable conference this year.
Yeah, the Saints look fantastic over the last 7 weeks in which they've gone 6-0, which I hate saying because there's no team I despise more than the New Orleans Saints, and I can't wait to go in my all Falcons red to the game on Christmas Eve in New Orleans, and hopefully the Falcons could do what they did last year and beat them, because there's no better feeling than walking out of that Superdome as a Falcons fan with the win. So I'm really hoping – you're right. And I talked about it last week. The Falcons had yet to play a division game, and I know they lost to Carolina, but they still have five more left. They have two against the Saints, one against the Panthers, two against the Bucks, and the Bucks are a terrible team. That is a team the Falcons should easily go 2-0 against. So
yeah,
then you
look, they just shut down Jameis too.
Yeah, then you look at the rest of the 6 weeks, and it's going to be decided in the division. Panthers, Saints, those Panthers games, if you can win those games, I mean, you're probably going to still end up coming on top in the NFC South, because I think you're right. I don't think the Saints or the Panthers are going to go on fire and win every game the rest of the way out. The Saints have already won 6 in a row. They're due for a loss, right? They play Buffalo this week in Buffalo. I think that's going to be a tough game. We're going to find out a lot about New Orleans there. A lot of their wins, I know they're 6-2. But their wins are coming against the Brett Hundley Packers, the Lions at home, the Dolphins, you know, just Bears. Just they've yet to play a playoff team over this win streak. So I'm not going to get too hot and bothered over how good the Saints are, because I think they're still a pretty average football team. But their defense improving does make this division a lot more interesting. The Falcons are going to have to – the last thing I can say about this Cowboys matchup is – Atlanta is coming back home after a three-game road trip. They're going to be a lot of pressure. They have their backs against the wall. This is kind of a tailor-made upset game. Cowboys coming off their biggest win of the season. They could have a little emotional letdown on the road. The Falcons have a good opportunity to win this game at home, and they're going to have to do it by beating the Cowboys in a shootout, like you said. Matt Ryan's going to have to throw for big yards. Steve Sarkisian and this offense is going to have to take advantage of their red zone opportunities, and they're going to have to get touchdowns instead of field goals. That wraps us up for the second episode of our Sports Talk ATL podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Me and Harrison will be back with you next week. It was real fun doing this again, and we'll see you next week.